Welcome back to The Deep Dive. You know, we always say this show is for those who want to really understand things, and today is no exception. We're diving into a concept that, well, it's kind of at the core of everything, isn't it? Sin.
Sin, yeah. Huge topic, right? We'll be looking at it through the lens of Dr. Robert A. Peterson and how he lays it all out in session 14 of his series, Humanity and Sin. He tackles this concept of original sin by walking us through the Book of Romans.
Original sin. It's one of those terms you hear and they can feel kind of heavy, maybe even a little intimidating. But what Peterson does so well is he helps us see how Paul, in Romans chapters 1 through 3, verse 21, really builds this incredible argument.
He does.
And so in this deep dive, that's what we're going to try to do. We're going to trace that argument from the beginning, from Adam and Eve, all the way through this idea of, you know, everyone being affected by sin, and then finally arriving at this concept of original sin. Mm-hmm. We want to make those connections.
Yeah. It's like an excavation. We're going to unearth that story of the fall and then see how Paul so skillfully builds his case for why all of humanity needs a solution. It's this journey from a perfect state to a world wrestling with sin and then the hope of something more.
Exactly. So let's start at the very beginning, shall we? Back in the Garden of Eden, Peterson reminds us, Adam and Eve, they're created in this perfect environment. No flaws, no problems, and God gives them this one very clear boundary.
Right. In Genesis 2.17, it's that command, don't eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the warning is pretty stark. You eat it, you die.
No ambiguity there. And that command, it wasn't random, was it? It was about establishing God's authority. But also, think about it, highlighting humanity's initial state. They were innocent, dependent on their creator. It was all about trust and obedience. And then, enter the serpent.
Yeah, things get a little complicated.
The serpent comes in and he doesn't directly contradict God.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't come right out and say God's lying. But he's clever. He plants those seeds of doubt, gets Eve thinking. He even suggests that eating the fruit will elevate them.
Great. Make them like God, knowing good and evil. That's a very powerful lure, right?
Yeah.
Questioning authority, promising something that seems better, even if it's forbidden. Classic temptation.
Absolutely. And Eve, she gives in. Adam follows suit. Peterson is very clear that the sin at this point is disobedience. That core trust, that faith in their creator, it's broken.
Yeah, and the consequences, they're instant. Suddenly they feel shame. They hide from God. And then we see that very human reaction, blame.
The blame game. It starts right there.
Adam blames Eve. Eve blames the serpent. And it's a pattern we see repeating throughout history. And you know what's interesting? Peterson points out that their expulsion from the garden actually had an element of mercy to it.
Oh, how so?
Imagine if they'd eaten from the tree of life in that fallen state. They would have been stuck, forever existing in a broken condition. That wouldn't have been a good thing at all.
No, not a gift. More like a curse. And then there are the ultimate consequences. Spiritual death, that separation from God, and eventually physical death, something that wouldn't have happened if they hadn't sinned.
And this brings us to a fascinating point made by Derek Kidner. You know, he was a brilliant Old Testament scholar. And Peterson quotes him saying that the doctrine of original sin, it's kind of latent, hidden in Genesis 3. You see the seeds of it, the idea of sin entering the world through one person, death coming as a result. But it's in the New Testament, specifically Romans 5.12, where this idea really crystallizes.
So Genesis, it tells us how sin got here. And now we jump ahead to Paul's letter to the Romans. And here's where Peterson makes a crucial point. Romans 5.1, day 19, you know, the passage everyone thinks of with original sin, it's actually nestled in this larger section, Romans 1.1 to 5.21. And that whole section, it's all about justification.
Exactly. It's about how God declares us righteous, not because of anything we've done, but because of Christ. That context is super important. And Romans 5.21, it acts like a bridge between those two concepts.
A bridge between justification and original sin.
Yeah. Think of it this way. From 1.18 to 3.20, Paul is showing us why we need justification. He's painting this picture of universal sinfulness. And then from 3.21 to 5.21, he explains how God gives us that justification through Christ. Romans 4 really zeroes in on faith.
And Peterson really highlights that central message in Romans 1.16-17. Paul is saying, look, the gospel, it's God's power to save everyone who believes, Jew or Gentile. It's in the gospel that God's saving righteousness is revealed. That's the good news Paul wants everyone to hear.
Absolutely. But here's where things get really interesting. Peterson brings up Martin Luther. Remember him? The reformer? Well, even Luther struggled with this whole idea of God's righteousness. He was steeped in the Old Testament where God's righteousness often meant judgment, condemnation.
So when he read about the gospel revealing God's righteousness,
he thought it was bad news. Like, here's another way God is pointing out our flaws. It was agonizing for him.
I can only imagine. That must have been so discouraging.
Until he had this breakthrough. He was reading Habakkuk 2.4, and suddenly it hit him. Paul wasn't talking about a condemning righteousness. He was talking about God's saving righteousness, the righteousness that justifies us through faith in Jesus. It was like the gates of paradise swung open for Luther. This wasn't just an intellectual debate. It was a personal crisis. And that realization that God's righteousness was a gift, not a demand, it completely changed how he understood his relationship with God. And it became a cornerstone of the Reformation. Talk about a huge shift.
So Paul starts with this message of hope, God's saving righteousness. But then he makes this really sharp turn. In Romans 1.18, he's talking about God's wrath being revealed. It's almost jarring.
It's a powerful move by Paul. He basically replaces righteousness with wrath in that very next verse. Mm. And what's so insightful is that he's showing us you can't truly grasp God's saving righteousness unless you also acknowledge his holy hatred of sin.
They go hand in hand.
Exactly. God's justice demands a response to sin. And it's against that backdrop, the reality of God's wrath, that his offer of salvation becomes truly meaningful, truly amazing.
So Paul spends a good chunk of Romans, from 1 point waiting to 3 point to suitory, really laying out his argument for why God's wrath is being revealed. And he's very blunt. Peterson identifies three main groups that Paul says are under this condemnation.
The first group, they suppress the truth about God that's evident in creation. Romans 1.1832. Paul says God's invisible attributes, his eternal power, his divine nature, they've been clearly seen, understood through creation since the beginning. He even quotes Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God.
It's this idea that you don't need a Bible. You don't need scriptures to know that there's a God. There's this general revelation just through the world around us.
And Paul says because of that, humanity is without excuse. We can't say we didn't know. And when people fail to honor God, give thanks, Paul says they become futile in their thinking. Their hearts are darkened.
So sin isn't just our actions. It affects our minds, our ability to think clearly.
Exactly. What Peterson calls the noetic effects of sin. Sin clouds our judgment, makes it hard to see the truth and make good decisions. And so they exchange the glory of the immortal God for images of created things. Humans, birds, animals. And that leads to some very serious consequences.
Paul uses some strong language here, doesn't he?
He does. He talks about God giving them up to impurity and dishonorable passions. And he's very clear that the Bible condemns homosexual behavior within this context of idolatry. At the same time, it's essential to remember the overarching call for Christian love towards everyone. It's a passage that requires careful consideration, looking at the full biblical context.
Definitely. And then Paul goes on to list other forms of unrighteousness, right? Gossiping, slander, hatred of God, disobedience to parents. It's a long list.
And the point Peterson highlights is that these people, they know what God's righteous decree is. They know that those who do such things deserve death. And yet, they not only continue doing them, they approve of others doing them, too. That's a deep-seated rebellion. And Peterson also touches on this idea that general revelation, it's universally accessible. It reaches every human being simply by existing within creation.
Okay, so that's group one. Then in Romans 2.1 to 16, Paul moves on to the second group.
The hypocrites. Those who judge others for the very things they themselves are doing. Peterson contrasts them with that first group. They see the wrong in others, but are blind to their own faults.
And are they off the hook?
Not at all. God's judgment falls on them too. Paul warns against presuming on God's kindness without repenting. He says that if we don't repent, we're storing up wrath. He also makes a point about those who sin without having the written law.
Meaning they haven't received the Ten Commandments, those kinds of things.
Yeah. Right. But Paul says they will still perish. They'll be judged by the law written on their hearts, their conscience. And Peterson connects this to the Imago Dei, the image of God in humanity, referencing Ephesians 4.2224. He's saying even without a written law, there's this inherent moral compass. It's like C.S. Lewis's argument for a universal understanding of right and wrong.
Got it. So we've got the first group, those who suppress the truth, then the hypocrites. Who's the third group Paul addresses?
The Jews. In Romans 2.1729, those who have the written law but don't live by it. Peterson's point is that having the law, it was a privilege. It gave them a clearer picture of God's will, but it also meant greater accountability. And when they disobeyed, the condemnation was greater.
So they were held to a higher standard.
In a way, yes. And Paul points out their hypocrisy. They teach the law, but then they steal, commit adultery, rob temples. Peterson quotes Isaiah 52.5. It says the Gentiles blasphemed God's name because of the Jews' disobedience. He ends by saying that true Jewishness, it's not about outward rituals. It's about what's in your heart. It's about the spirit. He even suggests there might be a play on the name Judah, which means praise. Real praise comes from a changed heart, not just following the rules.
Okay. So by Romans chapter 3, Paul has built this really powerful case. He's shown how everyone, Jew and Gentile, is under sin. Peterson highlights Romans 3:9-20, where Paul definitively says both Jews and Gentiles are under the power of sin. And to really drive that point home, he pulls in a bunch of Old Testament verses from Psalms and Isaiah.
It's like he's saying, don't just take my word for it. Look at what's been said all along. Peterson points out those key statements. None is righteous. No, not one. No one understands. No one seeks for God. Although he does add that nuance that it's God who initiates the seeking. And the language he uses to describe sin in this section, it's really vivid. He talks about throats like open graves, deceitful tongues, lips dripping with venom, feet running to shed blood. It's a stark, unsettling picture of our fallen state.
And, you know, with all this talk about the law, it's easy to get confused, right? What's the purpose? Is it to make us righteous?
That's where Peterson really clarifies things. He says, no, the purpose of the law isn't to justify us. It's to show us our sin. It silences every argument, holds the whole world accountable to God. It gives us the knowledge of sin.
And that leads us to this crucial turning point in Romans 3:21. After all this, Paul circles back. He says, but now the righteousness of God has been manifested apart from the law. And here, Peterson says, is where Paul starts to explain how God provides a solution to this universal problem of sin. Definitely something we need to explore more in another deep dive.
For sure, because when you understand the problem, the depth of it, the solution becomes even more incredible.
So what we've seen in these first few chapters of Romans, guided by Peterson's insights, is a powerful argument. Adam and Eve's fall, it brought sin and death into the world. And Paul shows us that this sinfulness, it's not isolated, it's universal. We see it in creation, in our conscience, and in the written law. This deep understanding of sin, it lays the groundwork for truly appreciating justification through faith in Christ.
Absolutely. When we see the problem for what it is, we can truly appreciate the amazing grace of the solution.
So much to think about. As you go about your day, your week, just consider this idea of universal sinfulness. Look around you. Look in human nature. How does it resonate with what you see? What does it tell us about our deepest needs and what kind of solution we really need?
That's a question worth pondering.
Thanks for diving deep with us. Until next time.